everyone, and welcome to the Spooky Park Bench podcast. My name is Mike Sim. I'm a commercial photographer. Oh my god.
Right off the bat.
I'm going to start that again. Or I could just leave that. No, I'm going to start again. Hold on.
Great start.
Quality. Hi everyone, welcome to the Spooky Park Bench podcast. My name is Mike Sim. I'm a commercial photographer based in sunny UK. And over the Atlantic is my reluctant friend, who is also a commercial photographer and the host of the YouTube channel, The Photo Department. It's Christopher Sturm.
Hey, I don't know why that was what I wanted to say, but hello, I'm here.
That was good though, I like that. Hey, I'm not quite convinced like how I even start saying hello on a podcast.
Honestly, it doesn't matter because I feel like every time I listen to a podcast that I like, and that people have the same greeting every time, it's like, you don't have to do that. You can do something different, you know?
No, I know, but like if you go like a Scottish hello, it's like not spelled H-E-L-L-O. I mean, it is spelled that way, but it's pronounced like H-U-L-L-O, like hello.
I mean, that's very Wallace and Gromit. I mean, we can do that.
They're not Scottish.
I know. Well, do I know that? I don't know that.
Wash your mouth out. But we were just talking beforehand about Christopher was wondering the difference between was it a jumper?
A jumper, yeah, because you were talking about how you're wearing shorts because it's hot, and I was like, oh yeah,
get that visual, ladies.
Well, is there a UK or a Scottish word for shorts that's different?
No.
Okay. Because I've had friends who'd be like, oh, I'm got to get a jumper, and I'm thinking like, oh, you're gonna change into like a full body coveralls,
like a jumpsuit.
Yeah, yeah. But a jumper in the UK is a sweater in the US.
Well, I would say that like a woolly jumper,
yeah,
is a like a woolly sweatshirt is a jumper.
Okay,
I'd call that a sweatshirt.
What about like a hoodie? Is that just a hoodie everywhere?
That's a hoodie. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know.
No, that's called a dainty fairy top.
Welcome to the Spooky Park Bench, where we discuss things that don't matter and have nothing to do with anything.
It wasn't even a funny joke. It was shocking.
There's no relevance
to the UK whatsoever. A dainty fairy top. Brilliant.
I don't even know. I'm changing my username on Instagram to dainty fairy top.
Go for it, man. That'll pump up those subscribers. Speaking of subscribers, actually, you're getting dangerously close to a big number.
Yeah, I'm going to hit 10K on my YouTube channel probably this month of June if the trend continues. I'm about 900 subscribers away, which is kind of bananas. I knew I'd hit 10K at some point, but this year, especially the last couple months, it's accelerated quite a bit. I've had a lot more interaction with people. I've had some cool collaborations that worked out really well and had ended up with some cool new friendships, which I'm excited about. So I'm thinking about doing some kind of giveaway or something to celebrate it, but I'm not sure what yet.
What about your virginity?
I'm saving that for my wife or husband.
I'm just gonna keep these quality jokes rolling because
I feel like
I'm unstoppable right now.
I feel like sometimes we're dangerously close to drive time radio in the 90s or the early 2000s, or
no, because we haven't got sound effects.
We don't have any sound effects. If you we can't do it. We might do it at some point. I don't have a sound effects board.
Do you have a sound effects board? I didn't even have a cable for a microphone until an hour ago. Never mind a sound effects board.
Dude, I was trying to record podcasts with a bad mic cable. So I mean, let's talk about our first bad review we got. We got our first bad review.
Oh yeah.
That's awesome.
I took that to heart.
As you should.
I mean, I didn't really because it wasn't about the content.
Right. It was about the quality of the audio.
The quality of the audio. Now I have taken it upon myself to deal with the audio. Actually, we should give a quick shout out to Rich because he's been a hero.
Rich has been great. He not only has been transcribing our episodes and then making these little infographics. What do they call them? Not infographics. What did he call them? He had a name for them. These hilarious. We've been posting them on our Instagram. If you want to go check out Spooky Park Bench on Instagram, we've been posting them. He is a great guy, and he seems to have some extra time on his hands and wants to help us out for some unknown reason. And we are
probably because he probably saw the reviews.
Yeah, he probably was like, "Oh, these guys need help. Oh my god!" So he's been really awesome, a good resource. I say that I kind of allude to this in the YouTube video that comes out on Thursday, or that came out Thursday. But I've never done a podcast before. We're learning as we go. This is also an transcontinental podcast, so we can't be in the same place, and it's difficult to schedule stuff, and you know, we have to be on each other's schedule, so it's kind of like difficult to do it, you know, really, really easily. Yeah. So
trying to squeeze learning how to podcast while around your life is quite difficult. So basically the audio quality for the last two has not been great, but apparently content fine.
Yeah. If you want to send it to me, I'll remix it. It just needs to be compressed and limited and sweetened a little bit of EQ. Here's the thing. I know that you pitched this podcast to me as me not doing any work and just showing up. That was like your pitch. But I'm willing.
I realized I suck.
No. I just don't want you to take everything on yourself and feel like you have to do everything. I can definitely, especially with audio, because I know how to do audio. So I can help you do that. I can edit the episodes. I got a bad review, but we take it as a badge of honor because the other reviews that we've gotten have been really positive, and I've gotten some personal feedback from people through DMs, or people have texted me, or, you know, and they've said that they really enjoyed it, you know, despite the audio difficulties. So I think that I'll take that bad review, and I'll take that as an opportunity to grow.
Yeah.
And I won't.
And I mean,
I won't fight that guy in public, you know?
I will.
Okay.
I'll fight him in public. I'll tell you what we can do. And you GoFundMe. We can GoFundMe to get his plane ticket to here, and I'll kick his ass.
Oh, we're going to fly the person who wrote a bad review to the UK. We're assuming he's not in the UK.
If he is, then I'll find him.
Or here's the thing. Might be an ex of mine. Might be an ex of yours.
It's definitely a guy.
For sure.
One interesting thing, though, about review scales is that people don't seem to realize it's a 5-star system. Mm-hmm. So they'll be like, really great content. Love what you guys were talking about. Audio quality wasn't great. 1-star.
Right. So they immediately, it's either 5 or 1. There's no in between. There's no gray area.
So beyond obviously wanting to get your 10,000 subscribers, what else have you been up to this week?
Videos out about shooting film that expired in 1978, which is very old. My great uncle passed away a couple years ago and left a bunch of film stuff behind that no one in my family knew about, and my dad recently found it, and so he gave me all this film that my great uncle bought in the 70s, and a couple cameras, a couple strange cameras, and it's Kodak Kodacolor 2, which is Kodak's first, I guess it was their first C41 film, which is really cool. And then some Kodak Pan, or wait, it's Plus X Pan, which is a black and white film, which 125 ASA, and the Kodacolor is 80. So I shot it. I shot the Kodacolor when I was in Milwaukee last week at my girlfriend's, and, you know, didn't have high hopes, but I thought that maybe something would come of it. But, you know, it expired in 1978, so my hopes were low, and I developed it, and yeah, there's nothing on it. It was completely blank.
It's just nothing.
So I thought I didn't want to take a chance and like blow it on development. So I developed it with two other rolls of film just to make sure the developer and the process is still okay. Mm-hmm. And the film's fresh enough, or the developer is fresh enough. And both the other rolls of film came out perfectly fine with great images. And this one looks like as if the developer was exhausted and it just went through the blicks, you know, so that it looks like there's like nothing on it. There's no rebate. There's no frame lines. There's nothing. It's completely blank. So I think it's just after all this time, it just degraded to the point.
Is that just chemical degeneration then?
I think so. I think it's just after a certain amount of time, the chemicals on the film just aren't sensitive anymore. And so, yeah.
Because what do they usually say? You give it an extra stop of light for, is it like every 10 decade?
Years? Yeah. So
yeah,
Yeah, and I mean that's conventional wisdom, but based on my research and talking to people who shoot a lot of expired film, that's not really gonna work for everything. So it's not gonna work for, you know, all films. It's kind of good for less expired film that's more modern. But if it's like an old mm-hmm. expired film, it's kind of like, do whatever you want, because who knows? Like, we don't really know, you know.
I suppose it also depends on how it's been stored for the last four decades.
That's the thing. There's so many variables with expired film that you could conceivably do everything right and still get nothing. So it's kind of a crapshoot. It was really exciting to shoot it because it was like, you know, and I mean that because like my uncle bought this in the 1970s. And so like, I had no idea. I had no idea he was a photographer. And then just to find that years later after his passing and then be able to shoot it, it's really kind of cool to have that kind of like connection. Though, yeah, nothing came of it. But I think it was a really cool experiment.
I've got an Olympus Trip that my granddad gave me a couple of years ago, and it had some film in it, and it's still in there.
you haven't finished it?
I don't know. No.
Oh, man.
I don't shoot much 35. And when I do, like, I go out with a camera that, like, I don't know. I just haven't finished it. I don't know what film's in it. Mm. I don't know anything. And I don't know when he shot it either. So, like, there's a very good chance that film's been in that camera for a couple of decades.
Isn't the Trip a pretty automatic camera? Like, there's no controls, so it kind of shoots whatever you
It's a point, it's a solar powered point and shoot.
Why don't you take what you should do is, next time you do a portrait session, just take it with you and just use it to take like behind the scenes or like setup shots, and then when you finish the roll, could be cool.
I mean, I've just got no idea what's on it, so like, what would be horrific is if like you'd taken a load of naked pictures of my gran,
right?
Or that would be terrible,
you know.
No, there's no, you know, like, that would be.
But what are the odds?
That would melt the chemicals.
But what are the odds that that's what's on the camera?
I mean, he would have to be a real dark horse, as would my gran.
Yeah.
Figuratively.
Jesus. God, that's scary. But I love it.
You don't know it's scary. My gran could be beautiful. She's not.
Fuck. Okay. So basically, shooting expired film is scary, and I have more, so I'm gonna shoot more of it. I'm gonna try some experiments. I'm gonna try to shoot really low ISO and see if anything happens. But I don't know. I'm pretty sure that film's done. But I do have the plus X pan that I have shot one roll of, and then I have a couple more rolls of as well. And I have higher hopes because apparently black and white film can last longer expired and will degrade way slower. So we'll see. I'm going to try that.
I think just, you know, there's such a romanticism about shooting film anyway. And I think that the idea of shooting expired film just sort of amplifies that romanticism. Mm-hmm. And also the slight jeopardy in the fact that it could be fucked, which in your case, tragically it was.
But it's a funny YouTube video because most of my videos have some sort of like, not like a reveal, but like kind of a reward for, you know, tuning in. Is like, you watch it and then I'm like, here's this stuff that I did, here's what I shot, and then you see it. But this video is like, I have nothing for you, I'm just going to talk about this film. And then luckily it's a short video, but it's still just like, you get no payoff. But watch
Great.
It anyway.
So so make sure if you haven't seen it, you tune in now.
10K subscribers. Let's do it.
You should get at least another 4 off the back of this podcast.
Oh, man, I can't wait.
That's 4, not 4K.
No, I know. I'm aware.
Well, this week I entered 2 portrait competitions.
Oh.
Sorry, I entered photographs I'd taken. I didn't personally enter myself in a portrait competition.
Oh, well, I don't care anymore.
Just a couple of selfies.
That's what I want.
One of them I can't quite remember the name of, which is tragic, but I just did it on a whim. But the other one's a big one. It's the Taylor Wessing Portrait Awards.
Awesome.
Which is the National Portrait Gallery one. And I apply to that every year with little or no success. But this year I have quite high hopes.
Honestly, that's way better than anything I've ever done. I've never applied for any photo contest or exhibition or anything. I've never done it because I have a lot of anxiety about showing my work in that way, because I feel like people that do photo contests, I don't know.
I did this one because I feel like I had a strong portrait for this one. Mm-hmm. It was when when I was working as a postman, I was out driving one day and I got out my van and there was a guy standing next to a baker's and I heard his accent. He had a Glaswegian accent and he was old, an old guy, an old short guy, and you could see old tattoos on his hands. Mm-hmm. And I needed to go and get something from the shop. And I thought, when I come back out, I'm going to ask him if I could take his picture. Like another time, obviously, not just there. I don't carry a medium format camera in my post bag.
You should.
I should. Yeah, you're right. Moron. So I went into the shop and I came back out and he'd gone and I was genuinely devastated. And then I was driving from one place to another later on in my post van and I saw him and I like just veered the van over to the side and like jumped out and cornered him. He was super nice. And he turns out he used to be a tattoo artist in Blackpool, but he's from Newcastle and he used to tattoo with his wife. And he was in his 80s now and lived in a care home. Mm. So I went a couple of days later, brought up the RB and, had a nice wee chat, set up some pictures.
Oh, so that was recent because you brought the RB, or is this old?
Yeah.
This was like, because you got the RB.
Yeah. A couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We got chatting and he was talking about like, the tattoos on his chest and stuff. And like, this guy's about, he's not even 5 foot tall.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. He's got, tattooed earlobes and everything. He's in his early 80s. And I said, oh, can we see can I see the tattoos on your chest and your back and stuff? Because his wife had done them. And he was like, aye, son, nae bother. So he's got this. Nae bother. No problem. No bother. No problem.
Okay. I don't know anything. Yeah.
It's Scots vernacular. So he's got this typical sort of British elderly person's home. They've got the sort of knitted throw that's similar to this one, like on the back, and then all the sort of garishly framed pictures and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then I've got this just sort of short, stout, heavily tattooed ex sort of punk looking guy sitting on his sofa with his shirt off, and I took his portrait there, and that's the one I've sent in.
Nice. We should stick that in the show notes, and then we should actually post it on the Instagram for this episode, so we can show people. That sounds cool. See, that's such a cool story and subject. So for my stuff, like the reason why I don't post or I don't submit stuff to photo competitions is because I feel like all of my work I've done has always been just like, oh, cool stuff I've seen, but are just, there's not like a lot behind it. And that the people who are in photo competitions always have photos like that, where they have like a cool backstory, or they have like something really interesting, like everyone has like a Steve McCurry Afghan Girl style photo where it's like, I traveled to this corner of the world and this happened, or like, oh, I met this gentleman like out and it turns out that he's in his 80s and used to be a tattoo artist with his wife. Like, that's such a cool story.
But it's total circumstance. Like, right. I've got loads of portraits that have got, they're nothing to them. Like, I've got portraits that I love, but the backstory is I saw this girl in the street and I said, can I take your picture? I think that was it. It's not interesting.
Right.
And I wouldn't ever put a picture like that into a photo competition.
Yeah.
Even if it was an aesthetically beautiful picture, there's nothing to it.
Right. It's just like, I have a hard time with the street photo thing, like seeing someone and being like, oh, can I take your picture, and like kind of involving myself, not because like wrong, or not because I think that people shouldn't do that, but just because like I get anxiety about it. Like, that's it. And then like, for me, when I do portrait work, it's always just been like easier to like find like a friend or somebody I know. And it's like, okay, how do I move away from just, photographing aesthetically pleasing people that I know, to start photographing things that are like real. And like, I want to do more documentary style work. I never do, because it's so much easier just to put yourself out there.
It's difficult to sort of because I've got loads and loads of like really like pictures that I love, but they don't work in Unity. And I'm not talking about portrait work. I'm talking about like new topography or whatever, that it doesn't have a theme or a common thread. So like, I can't, you know, I can't put it all together and be like, oh, this is this project and this is what it's about. And I don't have the, I don't know if I don't have the patience to, I've got so many project ideas, but it's seeing them through and also being okay with the fact that they might take a long time. It might take years until it's done.
Oh yeah. Like I think Mike,
I'm not
like Matt Day, his photo book, I think took him a couple years to compile all the work for it. I don't know exactly because I haven't like dove into the backstory about it yet. But like, you know, people that have photo books, it takes them a long time to compile stuff. And I didn't kind of notice this at first. Like at first I thought like, oh, if you want to make a photo book, you just go out and shoot for it and then put it together. But like, no, yeah. Like it's like a long process.
Yeah.
Which
and I think we're all such like perfectionists, I think, with time. I know that I'm really impatient. That's my issue.
Yeah.
Is that, and I'm a huge advocate of saying to people, you know, like just enjoy the process, enjoy the, you know, the journey, while at the same time being like, why am I not at my fucking destination right now?
Like literally like giving people advice and then going against that advice immediately.
Yes, I've done that my entire life. I'm really good at it.
That's what people are really good at.
I'm so good at that.
Yeah.
But speaking of photo books, that's good. We got a question this week from my friend Robbie. Who can also be your friend.
He is my friend by default.
By default, that's true. Yeah, that's very true. Robbie was kind enough to give us feedback on our first podcast as well. No complaints about the audio, which was nice.
Love you, Robbie.
Just about me in general, I would imagine, was his problem. His question was about the, with sort of today's digital age, about the importance of photo books.
Yeah.
And how important do we think they are? And I personally, I think they're incredibly important. Film photography is all about the tangibility to me. It's about the having the physical thing and the physical process of creating a photograph or creating an image. And I find that photo books are the same. Like a photograph on a screen looks, you know, it looks like a digital image. Mm-hmm. But a picture in a book looks just like, I don't know, it's so, so different and so much more powerful. Like I've been to exhibitions where Wim Wenders had that Polaroid exhibition that was at the Photographer's Gallery in London. And it was literally an exhibition of Polaroids, but I loved it. The exhibition was so powerful. And then because I'd seen the exhibition, I was then able to see the book and the book meant much more. Like, I don't know, what I'm trying to say is that the physical aspect of photography to me is so important.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that we get lost in the screen of things. Like it's really easy to just like think that Instagram is so important for photography when at one point it really was. I think just the nature of social media is it's not really anymore. It's a really great thing. Like I don't post all that often on Instagram. Like I posted 3 times yesterday because I had a bunch of stuff like backlog that I really wanted to just kind of share, but like I hadn't posted in like a couple weeks or maybe even a month. It's a great kind of like the way I look at it is like it's a great way to share work that you're doing in like a very like casual way so people can like see what's up. But it's not the photography breakthrough that it used to be. So I find that like if I'm sharing work on Instagram that I'm really proud of, it's cool that it's out there and people can see it. But then it's also like people are looking at it for like 0.2 seconds and they're scrolling past it, which is fine because it's not, that's how we're conditioned to take in social media content. Yeah. So you can't blame people for that because I do the same thing. Like I follow Tyler Shields on Instagram and he'll post some really cool print he just did. And I'll be like, oh, cool. I'll double tap to like it and scroll right past it. But that's just because we're conditioned. With a photo book, you kind of have to reckon with, you know, the page and like, you know, the light. You have to make sure you're looking at it at the right angle so you can see the foot. Like you can look really close to it. You can get further away. I have a couple of Annie Leibovitz books. I don't care how basic this is, but Annie Leibovitz is probably my favorite photographer of all time. Overall, I have a lot of favorites, but very well, because you know Annie Leibovitz is very, very famous, and her work is
she's amazing. But if you look at like her stuff, where she's using 462 lights and 25,000 assistants, is like amazing. But you know she's an amazing photographer when you look back at her early 35mm stuff because it's all beautiful.
Yeah,
So she's got it all. She's got an eye that, you know, you can't train.
Well, she has the ability in the crew to do big scenes like that, where she does use 160 million lights and big, you know, backdrops. But she also has, you know, she still to this day will do like one assistant holding one light on a boom, and she'll photograph people with one light, and she still is amazing. And so, but she has these books, like one of the books that she did early on is called Women. The foreword was written by Susan Sontag, and it's incredible work. And, you know, seeing it on a website or on a screen, it's still incredible, but it's also like divorced from you. Like, it's not connected to you because it's just presented in a way that's like, it's just not the same. And then having this book, it's a big book. It's bigger than 8x10. And, you know, flipping through and like, you know, there's the detail in the pictures and the depth, like you can fall into the page. Like it's a very different experience. And when I am doing portrait work, or when I'm doing like some kind of work that I want to use some of Annie's work as inspiration, or like try to like kind of capture a little bit of that magic, I'm not going to like an Instagram page or her website to like look at her photos. I'm picking up her book and looking at it because it's right there.
And then taking a photograph on your phone
and taking a picture on my phone and sending it. Yeah, no. And that I think that to me has been a big thing. And then also, you know, I made a video about it. We can drop the link to it in the show notes, but, I made a YouTube video about Autumn DeWilde, who is another one of my favorite photographers. She has a couple books out that I own, and those were really, instrumental in my growth as a photographer and like my wanting to do more as a photographer, because that tangibility of those images in those books really made me excited about photography in a different way than like seeing photography out in the world in general. Like seeing this stuff in a book compiled together very deliberately really was like, this is like a conversation. This is like really art. And it's something that I think that, I don't know, I think photographers these days, we just, to no fault of our own, get caught up in social media because it's the quickest and easiest way to share your work. But I think that having a photo book, or even just like printing your photos in general, is so important. And it's obviously a privilege to be able to do so. It costs money. It takes a lot of time. But if you're making photographs, it's something that will change your perspective. Just printing, even if it's a smaller print, just printing any of your work and compiling it together, it helps you figure out how to do narrative stuff better. It helps you to figure out how to like sequence like your work. If you're trying to put together a body of work, it's just a whole thing that I think is super necessary. And Matt Day has some videos about the process, 'cause he's made some books. And I think his videos are really good because he just kind of talks about it from a very practical, but a very emotional perspective, I think is really helpful. You know, and we talked about Jason Lee on the pod before. We love his work and his books are incredible. So yeah, I mean, everyone should make a photo book, or at least a zine, you know, something like that.
Yeah, and the zine's easy enough to do, and it's much cheaper, and it doesn't have to have that the longevity of a full project that you might want to put in a hardbound book.
And also, you know, having a hardbound book, it doesn't have to be that. It just has to be printing out your work in some way, you know? Not necessarily it has to be hardbound, it has to have like, you know, it has to be laid out in whatever way. Like, no, it just has to be tangible. That's all. It just has to be like, print out your work, put it together, staple it together if you need to. It doesn't matter. Just having it in a tangible.
But you know, I even love looking through like people's like family photos and stuff. Like I've got a real people that I know. I don't break into houses and just start looking through people's photos.
I was gonna say, whose photos are these?
But no, I love that. Like my Liz, her we were up at her parents' house once and they had loads of slide film and we were like projecting on the wall and looking at it. And I loved looking at that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Loved it. I just think there's something. Yeah, I hate using the word, but it is. There's just a romanticism around these things that doesn't exist in digital.
Right.
It just doesn't. And I don't mean digital photography. I don't mean like digital photography. I mean just a digital image.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we're so hardwired to looking at digital images all day.
Yeah. And it's just nice to disconnect and look at something that exists. Because
yeah, and there's a process to it, you know. Yeah. Even the act of taking it down off the shelf, what chair am I going to sit in, you know, that type of thing. Like this, you know, you get a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever, and you sit down. It's ritualistic doing these sorts of things.
I think it's funny, having grown up in the 90s and, like, you know, having been in that part of that world where we didn't have social media and we didn't have the internet, like, at our fingertips at all times, and sitting down to look at photos was just a thing you did. Like, my family was always big on taking photographs during the holidays and whenever family was around, or like just whatever, you know. I think I mentioned before, my mom gave me her Olympus Stylus Epic, which is the camera my grandfather bought for her when I was a kid. She had that camera with her all the time. And I don't know where it is, but I have like a box just full of negatives from up before I was born up until, you know, I don't know, a couple decades ago, of just like my childhood and like my family. My mom was like relentlessly taking photos. Like, she wasn't a photographer because she didn't care about the nerdy stuff. She didn't know, you know, what the focal length of the lens was. She didn't care about the speed of the film or what kind of film, but that was just how you took photos back then. You know, you just put film in a camera and took photos. So it was cool that I had so many photos. We had photo books and we had photos that were hanging on the walls. And so, like, just being a kid, like, sometimes just grab a album and look through it. But no one has photo albums anymore. No one has like tangible, like, of their lives.
No, totally.
Even when I was in high school, we had I had friends that had Polaroids that would just take Polaroids whenever they're out with their friends, and they just had like, they would make boxes, binders. Yeah. Or they'd go take their film or whatever to, you know, Walgreens and get the film. They wouldn't even get the negatives back. They'd just make 4x6 prints and then put those in binders. And like, that's, you know, just high school. That's not that far. That's not that long ago. That was, you know, 2004 is when I graduated. And it's funny to think, like, back then film or photography was still very tangible on the whole, like across. It's just different now.
It's unrecognizable how much things have changed.
Yeah. But like, we're so old.
I know, man.
We're like, no one looks at photographs anymore. But it's like, Jesus Christ.
Middle-aged hipsters. But then you get someone like, you know, like Vivian Maier, who spent her entire life documenting the world and no one ever saw it.
Yeah, and she's still making great work, you know, to this day. She's still taking great photos.
She's wonderful. She is wonderful. I wonder when her podcast comes out.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? How old would she be right now? She'd be very old. She'd be...
Not that old, I don't think.
I think she'd be in her 80s, right?
Yeah, but that's not that old. It's not as if she'd be 112.
I don't know, actually. Like, we're both guessing.
But you do know that like humans are very capable of living into their 80s.
I don't think that's true.
Well, I beg to differ. Maybe not Scottish ones.
I would love for you to produce some information about that. So she died in 2009. She was 83 when she died, 2009. So she would not be in her 80s recording.
She'd be in her
90s. She'd be in her 90s. She would not want to be on a podcast. Fine. I don't think.
David Attenborough, he's in his 90s. He's fine. He's still making stuff. I mean, obviously, this is irrelevant because she's like super dead. But
super dead.
Super dead.
But yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, and that's the thing is, like, I don't necessarily...
That's a photographer's photographer. That's somebody who is like, is it a photographer's photographer, I suppose? Someone that's just like hoarding all their own work. It's the opposite of today.
I think that that's part of the thing where it's like taking photographs for the sake of taking photographs and documenting, like, you know, your life in a certain way. Not necessarily to share it, but not to share it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like her, it seems as though her goal was not to, you know, make exhibitions and stuff. She was just simply living her life and documenting her life in a way that she thought was interesting to her. So yeah, I guess I'm a photographer.
When I was with Kyle the other day, I'd said that so nonchalantly. It's like saying when I was with Barack Obama.
Yeah, exactly the same. Kyle McDougall is just like the 44th president of the United States.
I knew it. I'm so down with American politics.
Jesus.
Anyway, I was talking about Vivian Maier in a way that I was saying that here's the thing. I've got a slight gripe about her. This is totally off tangent, but it's not a gripe about her. I'm sure she was lovely. It's that we look at her photo book and we're like, oh, these are incredible. But these were images made from her negatives.
Yeah.
So we don't actually know what she would have made her photos look like.
Yeah, but I mean...
The composition is incredible. Don't get me wrong. I'm talking about the tonality.
Yeah, but I'll say this, and this might be controversial. When I'm looking at a photographer's work, rarely am I judging their choice of tonality, color, contrast, whatever, because that shit is so in flux constantly. Your photographs, like my photographs, like I will add more or less contrast depending on how I feel that day. Yeah. If I do a photo later, like it doesn't fucking matter. What I care about is what her subject was, why she chose that subject, why she chose that composition, why she chose, you know, those things that you instantly see in a photograph, like that's way more interesting to me than like, you know, what the print might have looked like, because who gives a shit? Like, I care more about what they were thinking in the moment, because all that post stuff is that's like after the moment has passed, you know, like if I go through and like decide like, oh, I want to pump the contrast up in this image, I'm not still thinking about that moment I was in when I took the image. That that's why I almost kind of like unedited images. Or just like scanning film and then letting it just be by itself without editing it, because then that's truly like what was happening in that moment.
I agree with you 100% on that. I think it's that we don't know what she would have done.
No, with Mike, images. You're it's wrong. Like, and I just proved you wrong. So hang your head in shame.
You didn't prove me wrong.
No,
Joe,
I
you
agree.
Did. You gave an opinion. And do you know what opinions mean? Nothing. Absolutely
especially
nothing.
Especially on this podcast.
Especially your stupid American opinions.
Bingo. No, I think there's merit to that too. You're right. I mean, like who's to say what she would have done with her images? Cause you don't know. A lot Correct. Of it was undeveloped that was found too. So,
yes, that's true. That guy must've made so much money selling those.
I hope not. Well, not that I hope not. Yeah. I hope he did the right thing and didn't hoard a bunch of money for himself, because I think that whatever, that's a whole nother thing. People have talked about that at length. We don't need to get into it.
But it actually leads quite well into this question as well. We're talking about shooting things at the moment. I've got another question from Dave here. Mm. He's from the north of England. So it's, how do you deal with relentlessly shit light in the UK? I would love to live in SoCal, shoot overexposed portrait and get those delightful, rich, golden pastel tones. But there's about 6 days a year I can't get that kind. Or there's about 6 days a year that I can get that kind of light in the north of England.
Yeah, that's all you, bud.
Yeah, so I suppose the way I deal with it is that I know I'm not going to get those tones. So, like, I shoot for the environment that I'm in.
Right.
Like, I don't try to recreate. Like, yeah, I mean, go live in, like, SoCal, get those images, but you're not going to get those here. So, like, I tend to shoot. I use Portra. And if it's, if you shoot a certain time of day, if you shoot in golden hour, you're going to get more likely to get those types of tones. But the buildings aren't the same color. The grass is a different color. Like everything you're shooting is different. So it's not so much about the light, it's about the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Your environment isn't catered to give you those kind of like LA, California tones, because our buildings aren't like that.
Yeah, but I think everything that is just the right light. You got the right light, you can kind of approximate it.
You can, exactly. And I don't think the light in the UK is actually that bad. Like, it's grey a lot of the time, which is nice for, like, portraiture and stuff. And but I deal with it in the sense that I don't... I don't deal with it. I don't try to recreate something I can't recreate,
right?
Basically.
The other day, actually, or not the other day, a couple weeks ago, I shot some photos for a brand called Simple Shoes with my friend Austin. And the day we went out just happened to be overcast and a little bit drizzly. And I was shooting portrait overexposed. And yeah, I didn't get kind of what I was going for because there's no sunlight. There was just like gray diffused. So it's like, yeah. And we're in Southern California. We were in a part of the, you know, part of Southern California that's very Southern California looking. But then when it's overcast, it's like half of that aesthetic is just gone because it's all about the sunlight. And if you want to look at those images, they're on my Instagram. I'll put a link. But yeah, it's just funny because like it really is just about the available light, but also the environment you're in is totally true.
It's a kind of grass is greener situation where like anywhere I'm not, you can get really caught up in the fact that, you know, the UK looks like the UK.
Yeah.
But you just have to take different types of pictures, and you have to take pictures that suit the UK, the environment of the UK, the people of the UK. You want to highlight those as opposed to try to recreate something it's not.
Yeah, because you're not. No one's gonna buy that those pasty UK people are in Southern California. You know, there's no way.
I mean, I've been out in the sun today, so I'm looking pretty bronzed.
You actually are looking pretty tan. That's the funny thing.
Am I?
A little bit, yeah.
It's maybe just the window.
You look kind of golden.
That's definitely the light.
Like a perfectly little toasted piece of toast, you know? Ready for some butter, ready for some jam.
I'm a vegan, so...
Vegan butter and jam. Actually, you know what?
Vegan butter is jam.
Pretty much. But there's actually this vegan butter that I sometimes use called Earth Balance that's actually super, super good. It's really good on toast, and so I use that pretty often. But when I'm cooking, I have to use regular butter.
Vegan mayonnaise is way better than actual mayonnaise.
I don't disagree. It's pretty good. I've had both, obviously. But
I think it is much better.
Vegan mayonnaise is pretty good. What else that's good? It's vegan. Vegetables, just by themselves, great.
Really good.
Yeah.
Huge fan. Tonight I'm having some southern fried tofu. It's like supposed to be like Kentucky fried chicken.
Sure.
But then I'm going to put it on some subs and have some delightful rolls for my dinner. Ooh, I know.
That sounds good.
I know.
Are you going to make a sauce?
Rocket. I'm not going to make a sauce, no. I got them and I got the sauce I'm going to use, both from Marks and Spencer's, which is a shop you do not have, mm-hmm. but is a sort of very middle-class UK shopping outlet.
Just like Snappy Snaps, we don't have that either.
You're missing out on everything. Snappy Snaps, Marks and Spencer's, which means you don't get to have Percy Pigs, which is all wrong.
I don't know what the hell that is either.
yeah.
For dinner tonight, I'm making a pasta dish that's actually vegan.
Pasta.
It's pasta.
Yeah.
it's vegan except for the fact that I'm using copious amounts of butter to cook the garlic and the tomatoes.
And the tomatoes.
It's like pasta or angel hair with lemon juice, butter, garlic, basil, tomatoes, and it's so good. I guess I can make it vegan if I just use something other than butter.
Here's what you don't have to. So there you go. Just use butter.
I'm just gonna use butter. I really love this butter.
Most people do. I've never been a big fan, so I wasn't that.
Really?
Yeah, butter. Cheese. I was all right with the dairy side of things. In fact, I was kind of just all right with going vegan full stop.
I feel like dairy is a big thing in Scotland, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, so is alcohol. I'm a teetotal vegan. I'm not allowed back in my country.
Oh, yeah. They don't like you over there.
And I've got a daughter with an English accent. I am.
Is that your fault, though?
Well, I moved here, didn't I? Yeah. Sure, so, I mean, I'm banned. Or at least I'll get a thorough kicking.
The thing is, since you're sober, your reflexes are far more spry than maybe your fellow countrymen. So you might be able to dodge their kicks pretty easily.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. Then I'll hit them with,
this is getting dark.
Hit them with a cucumber. Hit them with a big cucumber.
Yeah, there you go.
And it'll be fine.
Talking about your wiener again? Come on.
Yeah. My big green wiener.
It is green now because you're vegan, right?
Correct. That's exactly what happens. Yeah.
Beautiful. I love it.
My pickle and beets.
Oh my god. Okay, that's
beets,
that's the end.
Right, yeah, I'm gonna go because I'm gonna go and swim in a pool.
That sounds great. I'm gonna cook some breakfast because it's 10:30 here, and it's what time is it? 6:30 your time.
Yeah, you need to get yourself a kid, then you'll get up early.
I'm good. Enjoy your swim. Thank you to everybody who tuned in to listen to us. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and a bunch of other podcast places. We're gonna have more guests coming up next week. We'll have someone new, and we're not gonna tell you until we do it because we are secrets.
There we go. That's our new band coming to a town hall near you.
Awesome. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Toodle pip.
Toodle pip.